I wish I was on the payroll. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have to buy a season ticket for a start. I'd have to pay to watch this tripe. To renew or not to renew? That is a question facing Reading fans as season tickets go on sale days after Brian McDermott's side halt a four-game losing streak with a draw at Loftus Road. We'll ponder whether fans will be back to make some noise when backing the boys, plus round up all of the latest news from around the world Reading Football Club. All of that, plus answering your questions in the mailbag and previewing those final two games of the season. Hello, welcome, thanks very much for joining us on this week's Tyler Sen podcast episode number 93. My name's Dan Wimbush, editor of thetylersen.com, and this week for our final regular season show, especially from the studio anyway, is deputy editor Johnny Williams. Johnny, hello.
Good afternoon. I'm disappointed that the budget seemed to have been cut here. We've been downgraded from Buxton bottled water to, well, it's just a small glass of, I can only presume, tap water.
Budget cuts. We've got to prepare for next season, Johnny. You've got to save some money for next year.
Absolutely. FFP and all that, you know.
Indeed, indeed.
Mansion tax.
I'm not the master of this domain. I am staying at the in-laws, which is why you may have noticed the sound quality is a bit echoey in the last couple of weeks, because we are in a conservatory.
Bit like the Medeski Stadium.
Ooh, I like what you've done there. Very topical. Thanks. I like it. That's why we pay you the not big bucks. And joining Johnny on this week's show is our resident Hulk, who celebrated his birthday this week. One, Dave Handbags Harris. Dave, hello. Happy birthday.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
25, yeah?
I wish.
Yeah.
Well, I wish as well, because then I'd still get the cheaper ticket next year.
Well, you know, just a very slow progress up to that 65 barrier, which my dad, Wim Sr., is very much looking forward to reaching in the not-too-distant future. But we'll come on to season ticket prices and lots more in the show. I said this will be our last show before our end-of-year wrap-up, so we'll do our best to try and muster some enthusiasm, because Lord knows there's not a lot of it around the football club at the moment. But we'll come on to all of that, starting with a 1-0 draw at QPR. In the recap.
View from the Tarhurst end.
Recapping this week's championship action.
So in that titanic battle of which hoops are superior, the latest chapter said that they're both about the same, which I think both sets of fans would unfortunately agree. Both heading for mid-table mediocrity, and nothing sums that more up than a 1-1 draw. QPR 1, Reading 1 at Loftus Road. The only good thing, as mentioned in the intro, is that it does end a four-game losing streak for Reading, gives them a tiniest bit of momentum going forward. And just, John, it just kind of stops the rot. It stops the massive sort of wave of negativity that was spreading.
Yeah, I think so. And it was interesting to note in Brian McDermott's post-match comments that he said words to the effect of, I brought subs on so that we wouldn't lose the game. I think, you know, he brought on Chris Gunter and Michael Hector, who aren't players who I think you'd bring on if you were trying to chase a winner. They're very much players who you think are solid defensively and can certainly help you close in on the draw. So Brian McDermott certainly did that for that reason. And yeah, I mean, you know, it's frustrating, I think, that we didn't get a victory in a game that you think was probably 50-50 in terms of which team would win it. Both teams not really playing for anything aside from perhaps their places in the team next season. But on the balance of it, as you said, you know, when you were setting it up, it's two teams that I think feel they should be doing better. But when you have a result like this, you get an impression of the level they're at.
Was the draw good enough, Dave?
Yeah. Take a point at QPR.
Is that just because you predicted 1-1 in the prediction league?
No, not at all. But obviously, my viewpoint might be slightly biased by that. But no, I'd have taken a point before the game, particularly, you know, four-game losing streak. You've got to do something to just stop that rot, as you say. So, yeah, 1-1 was absolutely fine as far as I'm concerned.
Any bright spots from performance-wise? Again, a bit of a patchwork side, some changes here and there. Dennis Rackles taking most of the plaudits for his goal, his third goal since joining, so he's not done too badly. I think he's probably amongst our leading scorers in the league over the past sort of 3 or 4 months.
He probably is, and there's a lot of people mentioning how many goals he's got compared to Nick Blackman and Connor Washington, which...
Yep.
Yeah, I can understand those people being a little bit arrogant about that. I mean, you know, great job to the... to the scouting team. Yeah, I don't think it was Brian McDermott signing. I think he admitted as much. But you know, Dennis Rackle has come into the side, and I think he's almost playing as you thought Matty Vidger would. He looks very instinctive. He looks not short of confidence, If you look at his finish against QPR, he takes it first time, knows where the goal is, almost knows where the keeper is, and finishes it with aplomb. It also, I think he hit the bar with a left-footed volley from about 18 yards as well. So he's clearly riding the crest of a wave at the moment, and you can only say that he looks like a very, very instinctive footballer. And like I say, almost what we would have expected or hoped from you know, the big money signing, if you like, Matty Vidra this season.
Yeah, absolutely. Dave, is there any legs in this... Vidra Kermigan partnership that hasn't got much legs left.
No.
The Kermigan Rackles partnership going forward.
Yeah, it's looking promising. Hark back to the Rotherham game where Kermigan was horrendously isolated up front, just crying out for someone to run off him, and within a minute of coming on, Rackles has run off a Kermigan knockdown and effectively set up the winner. So I wouldn't be too disappointed, based on what I've seen so far, if that was our first-choice strike pairing at the start of next season. Give it time, see what happens.
Yeah, Kobe, it's just showed in the last couple of games some really nice touches. We put up on the Twitter feed a really nice gif of the nice flicked pass from Kermigan into Rackles that, for the pen-no-pen incident against Hull the other day. Just does seem to be a little understanding, but we've said it since day one. As you said, Dave, he needs that player running off him, Kermigan. That's what he had at Bournemouth. That's what he had at times at Charlton. It's the type of striker he is. He's not that big lump target man. He's a bit of a Noel Hunt, really, for me. I can see him as that figure that is going to get the best out of a strike partner. He's not the answer in itself, but he is a key cog. And we saw with Noel Hunt, Noel Hunt was never a prolific goal scorer, but look at the players he played alongside and when they had their best spells. Kevin Doyle started the season brilliantly when Noel Hunt was playing alongside him. Hunt got injured, went off the boil. Jason Roberts, when Hunt got alongside him, it was magic. Shane Long had his best spell of form alongside Noel Hunt as well when he got that 20-goal season. So hopefully Kermigan is going to be that figure, but I'm not going to trust in him to get 15, 20 goals himself.
No, I think it's not necessarily his fault that he was hopelessly isolated at times. I think when we were playing the 4-3-3, the idea was that he was playing up front with two wide men who are going to be narrow wide men, I suppose you could say, and playing off him. And it clearly just wasn't working for him and the two players either side of him. So the formation had to change. I think to a degree we might have stumbled across one. I prefer to see wide players. If we're going to play a 4-4-2, then I'd prefer to see two, you know, natural wingers. But you know, if we continue playing a 4-4-2 diamond, then and it reaps results, then crack on.
Yeah, if there was one positive to come out of the Danny Williams v Paul McShane scuffle at Middlesbrough a couple of weeks ago, it was that it opened up a spot in the midfield, and that has been taken a couple of times now by George Evans. It was that January signing, and for me personally, it was the one I was most looking forward to seeing what he could do, and hopefully he would sort of have that Harper, Sidwell sort of impact of a youngster coming from a Premier League side. Johnny, he's had a couple of games now. What have you made of George Evans?
Well, I mean, like you say, he's only had a couple of games. I think he's pretty unspectacular, but you know, He has a bit of quality about him. He certainly, you know, he's got a bit of size about him. He's got a lot of presence. And I think he can be sort of that calming influence, that defensive figure in the midfield. I mean, you know, when I first saw him, I think didn't he play sort of straight after we signed him in the same midfield as Norwood?
Was it Sheffield Wednesday? Yeah.
And he pretty much looked exactly like Oliver Norwood in terms of sort of the passing and the, that style of player. And yeah, I mean, he looks a shrewd purchase. He's still very young. We know that he can do it sort of at League One and League Two level. It's another step up in the Championship. I think Brian has probably been quite clever in not throwing him in straight away, letting him build himself into the side. And yeah, I mean, you know, if he gets an extended run in the last few games, then hopefully we're going to see what he can do, because you'd have to say that he's probably the only midfielder, central midfielder we've got at the club at the moment who's definitely going to be here next season.
Yeah, certainly question marks hanging over a lot of them. Would you be happy to sort of build your midfield around him, Dave?
I think that's the idea. You buy young players, up-and-coming players, and if they, you know, they show a level of aptitude, then you build your side around them. So, no issues with that whatsoever.
A couple of other players in the side who might be playing their final games for Reading at the moment. Anton Ferdinand and Simon Cox, both featuring heavily again. Either of those players on your radar for next season, or is this just their filling slots in the team?
I think Anton, yes. I do think that I mean, we seem to say this every single week about Anton Ferdinand. You can never really pinpoint him in a game because he doesn't do anything spectacular, but for the most part, he doesn't do anything wrong. And I think he seems to just about be over that sort of recurring injury problem that has, you know, seemingly blighted him throughout his career. If he takes a club-friendly deal, then I certainly would bring him back for next year because I don't think his talent levels are going to drop off the cliff. And again, we potentially only have Jake Cooper and Paul McShane here next season. As for Simon Cox, well, he's shown flashes sort of in this attacking midfield role. I'm not quite sure about his prospects for next season. I think, you know, a move down to League One, a bit like, you know, when you see it with some older strikers as well, you never really lose that part in your mind, really. And I think at League One level, that could certainly benefit Simon Cox. So I'm not sure about him for next season.
Dave, you going to take a punt on either of them?
No, I don't think so. I think Ferdinand has proven to be far too injury prone. And no doubt he'll be quite expensive as well. Simon Cox, I'm afraid, I don't mind him as a player. I quite like him, but I just don't see a long-term future for him at the club. And, you know, at the age of, what, 27, 28 years old, something like that, he's, you know, if he's going to be offered a 1 or 2 year deal, it's just not, it's not going
to
work.
He's not quite at that age where he's prepared to sort of give up a high wage to sort of be comfortable, is he? He's still, yeah, I mean, what is he, 29?
Yeah,
30
he's
now.
Getting towards 30.
So he's not quite at that 33, 34 years old where you might just say, you know what, I'm quite comfortable here. I like the area. I'll take a 1 year deal at a lower price. I think he's going to be looking, and as he should be as a professional footballer, he's still got a good contract left in him. And if he impresses in the summer, someone takes upon him, I wouldn't rule out him making an impact somewhere lower in the Championship or a high League One.
I think certainly a promotion chasing League One side could, you know, take a punt on him and, you know, and bring him up as well. And, you know, then he'd get another shot in the Championship.
I think the guy's got an eye for goal as well. I mean, people might laugh and say, you know, well, what's he done for the last 18 months? But, you know, you look at who got the best out of him at the club, Nigel Adkins, and he played him alongside Glenn Murray, and he scored 8 goals up until the end of December. He was on for a 12-15 goal season. And, of course, we all know Steve Clarke never rated him, never played him at West Brom, and sporadically played him 1 or 2 games here and there. But as a striker, as in any player, you need more than just 1 or 2 games here and there to start building up a run of form, and he just hasn't had that over the last 18 months.
Yeah, he has shown flashes in the past. Obviously, he got a good goal at Middlesbrough. He's had some good chances as well, but he's in a poor side that's not given him an awful lot. But there is something to him. It's just, again, do you really want the... I don't want to say stigmatism of failure surrounding the club, but you just want that fresh, I think, fresh blood around the place. But maybe I'm just being overly harsh. Let us know. Tweet us in if you want to see Mr. Cox get a new deal. But as I said, 1-1, not really. It's hard to pull too much from these games, gents. Is there anything else in particular you wanted to raise from this one?
Again, a little bit concerned by the defending. I mean, you know, to concede from a corner, but I mean, at the back post, Al-Habsi's sort of all over the place. The defenders completely lose their man as well, and two people on the line don't manage to stop that. I do think that, you know, yet again, we seem to have almost made problems of our own creation in conceding goals. If you look at the past few goals that we conceded in the last few weeks and months, really, and you can almost say the whole season, you can't think of many where you applaud a team, the opposition, and there's no way that we could have stopped the goal. And I think that was the case again at QPR from a set piece, really poorly defended. I know that Brian McDermott is trying to almost shut up shop and, you know, stop teams from conceding, but we do still seem to be making those errors. And that's something that's concerning heading into next season.
Yep. Again, I can't say any more than I agree with you. Moving on, how it looks in the table. Just for those of you still keeping track, we are 15th in the Championship now. We're on 52 points, which is 2 more than we got last season under Steve Clarke. So, and Nigel Adkins as well, it must be remembered. So we've done a little bit better, but not really. If we don't get at least 2 more, then this will be our second worst season at this level that hasn't ended in relegation. The overall mark being set last year with that 50-point mark. Under Steve Clarke, you have to go back to 86-87 when we got 53 points to find another season as bad that we didn't end up getting relegated. So not good, I would say.
No.
I can feel the enthusiasm levels here. We're going to have to try and up this. But yeah, I mean, Reading can still mathematically finish in the top half. I think they're 6 points behind 12th place and they've got a better goal difference, so they could make it. But realistically, we're looking at a finish somewhere between where we are now and unfortunately down. Again, beating last season's 19th place will be some sort of small moral victory, but it will be only a small one at that. But I was going to mention it in any other business, but I'll bring it up now. We did wave goodbye to our final championship team. We've lost the MK Dons, Charlton and Bolton. Are you sad to see any of those three go?
Charlton because it's a good away day, but otherwise, no.
Bolton just because of the way it's been grossly mismanaged, and Charlton in a sense as well. I think both of those clubs have sort of, you know, not through performance on the pitch, but performance off the pitch really have met their downfall.
Yeah, one thing that I am starting to, you know, realise as I get older and hopefully a bit wiser, my wife might disagree, is that I don't tend to laugh as much at fans anymore of these clubs, because you have to realise that it's not the fans' fault. The fans didn't vote to bring these owners in, and the fans, as you look at Charlton, the fans at Charlton have done absolutely everything in their power to get rid of their owners. And just a sheer, I don't know what it is, I mean, they can't get rid of them. And Reading have come very close to this scenario. Let's not sugarcoat this at all. If the Thai, regardless of what you think of the Thai ownership, they've effectively saved this club from administration. And it could quite easily be Reading fans, you know, shouting at Anton Zingarevich, who is, you know, AWOL and nowhere to be seen. And, you know, people like Chris Samuelson could be the villains in our own downfall story. So, yeah, you have the light little chuckle because it's Bolton and 95 and all that. But it is very sad. It's sad to see clubs go down through faults, not really because there's 21 teams better than them. It's more because they're so badly mismanaged that it's not even a fair fight. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Perfect sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, good to see I've not completely lost my marbles.
Still
9 months
still okay to laugh at MK Dons, though, isn't it?
Little bit. I did like Stadium MK. I went there to see us get beat 1-0. Interesting that MK Dons have taken 4 points from us this season and Reading have taken 4 points from Burnley.
I went to Stadium MK, but not to go to Stadium MK. I went there to go to IKEA.
Excellent.
Very strange places, Milton Keynes. But
yeah, anyway. Well, the stadium is fantastic. Unfortunately, it was just so, so soulless. Because of the fact that it's a, you know, a 30,000 seat stadium and there were 10,000 fans in there. So, and it was very hard to get any sort of atmosphere. But anyway, so we say goodbye to those three teams. Looks like we'll be saying goodbye to, it is going to be two from three now. Burnley, Brighton and Middlesbrough all scrapping up. Very dramatic race at the top.
What a tasty last day of the season.
I know.
Brilliant, isn't it?
Which two's your money on?
Well, Burnley have to because they've got two easy games.
Yeah.
And
they deserve it.
Yeah, possibly. And then I think you just about fancy Middlesbrough not to lose at home to Brighton.
Yeah.
Probably.
Dave?
Yeah, it all depends on what happens this weekend with Middlesbrough and Brighton, doesn't it? Burnley are there pretty much, I think. They've just got to, you know, pull a half-competent performance together next week, and I think they'll be up.
Yeah, Andre Gray voted the Championship Player of the Year.
Yeah.
Those of you who saw him at the Bladesky might disagree with that. But generally, a fair award. Best player you've seen in the Championship this season?
For £8 million, you'd expect him to be half decent, wouldn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, he's been a good player. And I mean, Burnley are on a sensation. I don't think they've lost since January or February, Burnley. They've certainly gone on a long unbeaten run. They fully deserve it. I mean, a lot of their players, you know, they kept together a good lot of their squad that got relegated last year. So, you know, fair play to them for bouncing straight back up, seemingly. Not to put the mockers on them.
Well, yeah, losing the likes of Trippier and Danny Ings as well was a big blow. But Sean Dyche has done really well. I know Brian McDermott takes a lot of pride, but has a lot of good things to say about Burnley. And it is good because that is the sort of model that Reading need to follow. You can say, oh, well, they spent £8 million on Andre Gray, but that's what you get from parachute money. Reading had similar parachute money and unfortunately decided to spend it on Royston Drenthe.
And Pavel
Pogrebniak and Danny Williams and giving big new contracts to Hal Robson-Kanu. So, you know, we had that and we'll come on to it a little bit later on in Newsbites as well. But Steve Clark wasn't afraid to slam Reading's spending of money before he arrived at the club. But in the meantime, we will come on to that and a lot more in Newsbites.
Reading Newsbites
on the Tarlhurst End podcast.
Newsbites time then, and there are a few bits to raise this week, mostly because Star have had their senior management meeting where they get to sit in with key stakeholders to do with Reading and clubs management and whatnot, and a few points have been raised and come back from that meeting. You can read full minutes and notes from that meeting up on the Star website. And we've always had an article up on the tarlesson.com if you want to read a bit more detail. But the key points I took away from it, gents, were that the club is backing a cap on away ticket prices. We've obviously had the Premier League announce their £30 limit. Reading are apparently one of the clubs who support a cap in the Championship, the Football League to follow. Also, there were a few queries raised about the policing against Crystal Palace in the FA Cup quarterfinal. If you were in that stand, you might remember there were some police in riot gear and inside the concourse. Apparently that was all to do with a bit of a tip-off that they'd got. There might be trouble and fans trying to get down to that end of the ground to taunt and goad the Palace fans. Also, unfortunately, the ramifications of that Bradford pitch invasion play a part because the club got fined and, you know, severely warned about their future conduct. If there was another incursion onto the pitch, it could be a real financial hit from the club, and it's something they really can't afford at the moment. So I think they were being a bit safety first, so that explains that. And also car parking, we've had a couple of car parks close due to property developments around the Medici Stadium. The club have ensured fans that the current arrangements will remain in place for next season. They've also vowed that should there be any further changes, they'll do a lot more to sort of notify fans and direct them towards alternative facilities. So all good things, all good common sense things, I think we'll all three of us would agree.
Pretty much.
Yeah. But as I said, go ahead onto the Star website for a bit more information from there, and you can obviously speak to them if there's any points you'd like to raise when they have their next meeting. I know they have them sort of 2-3 times a year, so it's always good to keep in touch. Right, meanwhile, Steve Clarke has had his say on Reading Football Club. He was a guest on Sky Sports Goals on Sunday most recently, and did talk about his time at Reading, and he didn't quite slam the football club, but he didn't speak about them kindly, Johnny.
No, not at all. But I mean, you can sort of understand it, really. He'll feel like he was harshly dealt by. And I mean, I've said this so many times, we'll never know the true meaning or results of what happened on that fateful day when he was sacked or when he moved to Fulham. But he, you know, he'll be trying to save some face and, you know, potentially show another club that he, you know, is still horrible and was harshly done by. I think on the same programme, he said to Celtic, "Give me a call." So,
yeah, if you missed the comments, you can, as I said, head over to tarlesson.com. We have got a full transcript of what he said. But Dave, sort of the key points there, really, saying that he felt that he didn't do his due diligence when he took the job. It sounds like he took it in a hurry. Apparently, he was on a beach in the Caribbean and he was told to get back there that week. So he flew right
the
over.
The next day. I mean, Nigel Atkins was sacked at 6 p.m. on the Sunday.
Well, I remember we were doing our show, weren't we?
And Clark was appointed the next day at 12 o'clock. It was 18 hours.
Yeah.
So literally on a plane and to a press conference.
So he says he didn't do his due diligence. He feels that the club had frittered away their money under the Russian ownership and that he was, you know, turning them around. He said they had a good run of form and that things just started to go badly. He talked about the Fulham debacle and sort of said that the club had an approach and had agreed to let me speak to them. I spoke to them and decided to stay. And he said if I'd known what was going to happen, then maybe it might have been different. But he said he always sacked 3 games later. Has he given an overly positive Steve Clarke view of things, Dave, or was he pretty fair?
I'm not entirely sure. He was entirely correct about things in terms of that he thought that he was, you know, sort of safe in the job after he'd spoken to Fulham, because Nigel Howe went very publicly on record and said that results have got to improve now. Effectively saying, otherwise you're a dead man walking. He lost 2 out of his 3 games, and the one game that he won was a very ropey victory against hopeless Bolton. But, you know, not complaining about not doing his due diligence on the club. I mean, what was he doing in the taxi on the way in? What's he been doing since he got sacked from West Brom? You know, if he's looking at managing at Championship level, Premier League level, then, you know, there's enough stuff out there to know what's happening with the club. Everybody knew that we were in dire financial straits in the summer of 2014. Everybody knew that we had new owners. It wasn't the Thai's fault that Anton and TSI decided to, as you alluded to earlier, splash all the money on Royston Drenthe and various other massive contracts. So, yeah, we frittered away the money, and it left him with a little bit of a problem. But then it's not as though he didn't have money to sign players. I mean, he signed plenty of players on loan, for example.
Yeah.
As we say, 6 players, if you include Michael Hector. He signed Nathaniel Chalobah, Nathan Ake last season, and effectively, and played them in almost every single game that they were available. So, Long and short of it is that, you know, while there were a couple of extenuating circumstances, the majority of his problems were down to Steve Clarke and his own management.
Yeah,
and his decisions.
And Steve, who's on this show last week, Raw Hoops, has written his opinion piece on the Clarke comments, which you can also go check out over on the website as well. And Steve rightly points out, and like you alluded to, Johnny, that he's a man that's trying to get himself a new job. He's effectively got two failures on his CV now, and the shine has certainly gone off the Steve Clarke managerial record. I know he's talking a good game, talking about I'd like to manage Celtic and stuff like that, but you look at his CV, really it's not that impressive at the moment.
No, it's not, but the thing that I would say, and this is something that he said as well, is Brian McDermott hasn't done much better. And he also said the same about Pepe Mel when I think it was Pepe Mel who replaced him at West Brom. Pepe Mel almost got them relegated. I think he got sacked and they brought someone else in to actually keep them up.
Does that not say more, though, about the squads that Steve Clarke leaves behind?
I think with West Brom, it was appointing Pepe Mel was a really strange one. If they'd have... Steve Clarke, you've got to take a look at the fact that he won something like 5 in 20 league games before he got the boot there. And many people thought, that's a bit of a strange one. But when you look at the league record at West Brom, and then you combine it with the league record at Reading, it don't make pretty reading. So it's no surprise.
He seems a manager that is a good coach, and for individual games, he can set them up very well. When it comes to the grind, the relentless grind of the Championship, where he's actually got, you know, he's only got a couple of days, sometimes not even like one day on the training ground, he doesn't seem to be able to turn it around in a hurry.
It was a bit deceiving as well with his teams, because you think, we're playing all right here, we're playing okay, but then you take a look at the longevity of results, and, you know, the results just didn't bear out what the individual performances necessarily suggested.
But the thing I'd say coming back to that again is, you say about the longevity, I mean, was he really given the longevity? And, you know, this is an endless cycle that we're almost certainly getting ourselves into now, because if Brian McDermott does the same and it gets to November, December, things aren't picking up, then we'll say the same thing about him and there'll be the people saying that he should have stayed. He can set players up for specific games, but I don't think when we were tanking in the Championship and getting to the FA Cup semi-final last year, we thought, well, this is all Steve Clarke's fault. We were saying it's the players. The players can't be bothered. The players can't get themselves up for a meaningless Championship game wherever, because they've got Wembley round the corner. I know a part of that comes down to the manager, but I don't think it's fair to retrospectively judge Steve Clarke on the failures of the squad last season.
No, and certainly I'm not saying he was an absolutely awful, useless manager and he couldn't do anything right, but as Dave said, his league record is poor. And it's, you know, we went over all this at the time. Remember speaking in a hotel room up in Manchester. Yes. When this Fulham...
That was when we thought we'd gone.
When the Fulham saga was happening. But he can say whatever he likes about Fulham, and he can say whatever he wants about getting permission to speak to him. Sometimes in life, and I'm sure you're all sitting here, you will get offered something where you know there is one answer you will have to give. You know, you're offered something of... I'm trying to think.
Something tempting.
Yeah, well, say for example, you're invited out to a big family meal from your other half, and they say, well, if it means, you know, if it's a real inconvenience, you can stay at home. You know full well, you should read between those lines, and know there is no way that you say no. You say, yeah, sure, I'll stay at home. You know full well that there is an expectation you'll give an answer. I am sure that when Fulham came in, the owners, they put the bid to him, and they fully expected him to say, no, I'm happy here. Thank you very much for the offer, but I've been employed here to do a job. The fact that he actually said, I want to go and talk to them, that was the wrong answer to give. Yes, he was offered it, but he dug his own grave, effectively, that day. And I don't think there was a way back unless he got those wins straight away. And the fact that the team were tanking straight after that said it all.
Yeah. I think we'll leave it there. Otherwise, we could talk for another half hour on this. Really,
yeah, we could do. We'll do a Steve Clarke retrospective special.
The life of this is your life.
Indeed. So yeah, if you can find a better analogy of questions you've been asked where you knew there was only one answer, please send them in to @thetarlowestend. We need some good comedy for the end of season special. We will come on to one other big bit of news in Pub Chat. That is the clubs announcing their season ticket prices for next year. So stay tuned for that.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast. By Reading fans, for Reading fans.
So we've waited a few weeks now for the club to reveal their hand for next season's season ticket prices, and they've just done so. It's nice of them to wait for a draw rather than defeat. I imagine that these might have been on the table for a few weeks and they were just sort of waiting for something a little bit positive. Well, maybe that's just a cynic in me, but the prices have been announced. The main talking points are that if you sit in the East and Lower West stands, you'll be paying no more money next season. The prices have been frozen. If you're sitting in the North stand, adult season ticket prices have gone down by £50. So it's only £325 if you are renewing. And if you're sitting in the Upper West, it has gone up by about £25. So you'll be paying slightly more, but they're apparently promising a new experience for those sat in the West Upper. Now, what that means, I'm not entirely sure. The club haven't completely revealed those plans, but it sounds like they're going to try and make that viewing experience a little bit better.
Yeah, and I think John Keane raised an interesting speculative point that it could be something like you get a free drink with your ticket, which I'd imagine for them makes them a tiny little bit more money, because it's probably cost less than £1 to actually make a drink. So if you put it as a pound a game, they're making a little bit more money. I don't know. Purely speculation.
Dave, what's your overall reaction to the pricing? Happy?
Content, I suppose. I would have liked to have seen reductions across the board, if I'm totally honest. But then, you know, realistically, was that ever likely to happen given the financial state of the club? No. North Stand, I would have liked to have seen the family stand move to somewhere different. I would have liked to have seen efforts on the club's part to produce a sort of a singing area, unofficial singing area, as it were. And it's something that's been discussed at the focus group, that. You know, Y25, 26 doesn't lend itself particularly well to acoustics and noise. So I would have liked to have seen the North Stand to become, you know, cheaper and with a temptation for atmosphere creators to move around there. Upper West price, little bit of insight. There were a couple of things from the focus group that at the time nobody really thought anything of, but I'm just thinking of the increase in price being because the club may have installed something like contactless payment up there, which came at a cost. The costs were discussed in there. There were samples of different sort of catering options, what I would call slightly a bit sort of higher brow than your bog standard hot dog and
how dare you just dismiss the rollover
pies. And so, I mean, I'm not entirely sure really exactly where the increase has come from, but I'd also suggest that maybe they're going to install maybe an MK Dons Arsenal-style comfy seat up there. I don't know.
Yeah, quite possibly. I mean, one of the points raised by Will, who's written our opinion piece up on thetalesend.com about these prices, is he speculated that maybe as well it might be designed to not drive people out of the Upper West Stand, but if you see suddenly, a season ticket for the North Stand is a whole £125 cheaper, maybe you'll go and sit there. And that does look a bit better on TV. It does do a little bit more for the atmosphere. The North Stand, especially in recent weeks, has been looking woefully empty.
And the corners, as well.
So if there is that extra temptation, you know, saving £50 compared to paying an extra £25, maybe a few more people go and sit up in the North Stand. I mean, the view, I suppose if you go and sit in one corner of the North Stand, isn't a million miles different.
No, but I don't buy that as a reason. I don't think it's some sort of vanity thing to make sure that the grounds, that the stands are shown on TV are full. Because ultimately, I don't think that affects whether you go to a match or not, whether you choose to buy a ticket on the day. I mean, you know, going back to the sort of the catering options, if you like, and people potentially having to, if you like, pay a tax for contactless payment or whatever. I mean, in a sense, that's, you know, if that is the case, that does seem grossly unfair that one, you know, even if you buy one drink a game, that you're being forced to pay for the privilege of making it slightly faster.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously all speculation at this point, and we don't really know. I mean, they could unveil a series of packages that makes it all look great. And it is some of the best views in the stadium. It's always been that price, that little bit more than the others. But do you generally agree with separating the east stand and West lower experience than the North stand, do you generally support the idea that it should be cheaper to sit behind the goal?
Well, I guess it sort of comes back to the television, if you like, because, you know, with television, you always watch the game from the sideline. And so perhaps, you know, as time has gone on, that's become more and more the way that you want to experience the match. And so, you know, enticing people into the North Stand, absolutely make the tickets cheaper. And they've probably seen as well, I mean, particularly outside the North Stand, I think was where they have the family zone, isn't it? Outside the ground. So, you know, that's almost certainly what they're trying to do with that. With the younger 16 to 25 tickets as well, they're probably trying to, if you like, make the North Stand as the new generation or the new family stand, if you like, make it that affordable stand. Because, I mean, for, you know, I'll give the specific example of myself. I'm going to be in the adult range next year, and it's a lot of money. It's £375. If you look to say £325, you know, that's a little bit less. So they might be going for that target of basically 18 to say 30-35 in the stand.
It's nice to see that that category of prices has remained. It is a very tempting option for those who are between 18 and 24. You know, they're paying less than a tenner a game. I mean, that's fantastic value. Mm. Anyway, look at it. So credit to the club, especially in this era of FFP. It would have been quite possible for them to justify an overall raise, saying that the club's running out of parachute money, we need the extra finances. But the unfortunate thing is, and this shows how supporter power is gradually declining and why clubs are a little bit more reluctant to engage with fans, even if they charged 10,000 season ticket holders £25 extra a year, that is going to generate you £250,000. Now, that sounds like a lot of money, but it's not in this today's championship. That is, you know, a couple of months' wages for a Royston Drenthe. That is... it is nothing. And unfortunately, the power of people that vote with their feet in terms of actual finances is diminishing because the money from TV is so dwarfing gate receipts now.
I don't necessarily buy that that's not a lot, because in championship terms, £250,000, bearing in mind that I believe, I have it on good authority, the average weekly wage in the championship is somewhere between £8,000 to £9,000.
That's half a year's wages.
Don't get me wrong.
For one player.
I mean, it's a lot of money, but in the grand scheme of things, for what it would do to upset fans who are suddenly being asked to pay £25 more, they can't exactly point to it and say, oh, well, this gets us this new player, because it doesn't. I mean, it might get you a...
It was on the flip side. I mean, you've spoken about a £25 increase. I was thinking earlier today, yesterday, whenever it was, about the club just blanket, you know, reducing adult season tickets to in North, East and Lower West to £300. And then I just, you know, again, used the arbitrary £10,000 supporter figure. And I just thought, you know, can the club afford to lose £750,000 a year? They can't. And so, you know, for that single reason, I just thought, you know, to actually keep the prices as they are, reduce the lower and the North Stand and increase Upper West. I think they've done, you know, they've done an increasingly good job.
Do either of you think, though, that massive reductions, say even if they'd slashed £50 off, do you think that's going to encourage a lot more either renewals or new tickets?
I think it would encourage more renewals. I'm not sure that it would encourage many new tickets, because I think almost the club is probably at saturation now in terms of the loyal fans who have been coming, say, since 2004-2005. And now that's what, our third year back in the championship, the club don't seem to be anywhere close to, you know, the top half, say the top six, playoff chasing. So I think now you're almost getting back to that loyal fan base who probably will buy their season ticket. They'll probably put up a big upheaval on social media complaining, but then they will buy their season ticket for next year. And I don't think you're going to find many new fans, or certainly new season ticket holders anymore. I think adults anyway.
I think what we are going to see a reduction in the number of season ticket holders this year.
Absolutely. Yeah,
by all accounts, actually, the number of season ticket holders increased from 14, 15, 15, 16. So, you know, I think we're going to see that reduction. At the moment, what we stood at average attendance-wise, we're what, 17?
We're about 17, yeah. It's still one of the highest we've had.
You know, and the last time we were sub-17, well, I believe, was 03, 04. And back then, I think we had something like 8,000 season ticket holders. So, you know, I don't think we got quite down to that. I think we had 11,000 this year, something like that. I think we'll be down. We'll lose 1,000, you know, maybe 1,500 season ticket holders overall. But you know, season on season, you get, by all accounts, you get a 10% churn on average. So 10% won't renew, and then you get 10% sort of new season ticket holders. So some won't renew regardless, but I just don't think you'll see too many new season ticket holders this year.
Yeah, I guess the gamble is that they've put in this new bracket, this 18-24 bracket, and the hope is that there are people like Johnny that will convert from that and will pay the extra £200 when that age group expires. But
after having paid the full whack for the last 5 or 6 years.
So. All right, at least you got a cheap one this year. I paid my 375. I have renewed, by the way, and, you know, whether it just be foolishness, I have renewed.
You're giving them the interest early, Dan.
Yeah. Well, I had money in the account, so I thought I'll sign up for another year of pain. The things I do for you, Tarlhurst End audience. The things I do. Oh, well. Anyway, thank you very much to those of you who have left your comments on Will's article. So if you do want to discuss this further, do let us know at the Tarlhurst End on Twitter. Or I said, go leave a comment in Will's piece. So we can continue the debate there. But in the meantime, it is time for some more of your thoughts via the mailbag.
Get social with the boys.
Find them on Twitter
at the Tarlhurst End
and facebook.com/the Tarlhurst End.
So thank you to everyone who's got in touch via at the Tarlhurst End on Twitter, thetarlhurstend@gmail.com and facebook.com/thetarlhurstend. We'll start with the emails, and Hugh, who says, stick with Rackles and Kermigant partnership for next season. Sorry, should we stick with Rackles and Kermigant partnership for next season or twist and sign a new striker in the summer? Bearing in mind, Samuel will return. Also, can I get a shout out on the podcast, please, for the kayak? I'm about to start for cancer research, travelling from London to Reading in time for kickoff against Preston. The donation page is on my Twitter. That's at Hugh Van Isle on Twitter. So very best of luck there. We will include a link to that on the episode when it goes up on the website. So head over there and I'll include a link to Hugh's Twitter for that. But we sort of touched on this earlier.
Is he going to be going up the Holy Brook to the Medeski as well?
I don't know. We'll have to ask.
It'd be a bit of a shame if he only went up the Thames and then decided to walk the rest of it.
Well, Hugh, you know, get in touch with Dave on Twitter. Let him know. Or, you know, if you want to go on the boat with him, Dave, you want a kayak? Got time?
No, sadly, I'm refereeing in the morning.
Oh, there you go. It's
big match, top v second. Winner takes all.
In terms of his question, though, I mean, how many strikers would you be looking to sign in the summer? Because we do have Kermigant under contract, Rackles under contract, and Dan Samuel is coming back from his spell at Gillingham. That leaves three on paper, plus yeah, Novakovic's and a few other academy products. You looking to buy one, two?
I think you'd be probably just about content if those three were the only three that we had next season. Possibly one more. Yeah, but I mean, in this era of playing one up front, if you've got four strike, I know Brian's playing two up front at the moment, but if you've got four strikers and you've got one spot for it, then it's hard to keep them all happy. I mean, you've got players like Rackles who can play out on the wing. I mean, you've got other wingers as well who you can probably stick up front in an emergency. So, and like you say, you've got the younger prospects. I wouldn't want to lean on them too much, but I think there are bigger priorities in the team than striker at the moment.
I tend to agree, but I think this is also where McDermott's getting a very, very good look at Simon Cox, because he's foreseeing the situation as described. And is he good enough? Will he offer something? Will he be able to do something for us? So interesting to see what happens with Coxie in the summer.
I definitely think you need a striker. I think if only to get some bums on seats. I think you need that name, even if it's an Adam Lafondra type that's been banging in the goals in the lower leagues. You need someone that's got experience of putting the ball in the back of the net on a regular basis at this level or high. You just need that excitement factor. I mean, Reading have always had that exciting striker to sort of get you off your seat and be really encouraged. And that, I'm not saying it can't be Rackles, but I wouldn't bet the house on it. And I just would like to see that established. I know Lafondra is one of the names linked. Even just someone like that. Johnny's shaking his head and making a really scrunched up horrible face now that I've mentioned the prospects of Lafondra returning.
He came out when he was here. He said he was complaining because he wanted to start more games, so he left. Is he going to start more games again under Brian McDermott?
I wouldn't. I personally wouldn't. I think it would leave us down a particular ditch with too many of that type of striker.
Mm-hmm. Well, I just want someone with pace. I want someone with genuine pace that we haven't really had since Shane Long left. Someone that can get in behind that defence, can make those runs behind from Kermigant flick-ons and really sort of unsettle people.
Unfortunately, they cost a lot of money. Those people with pace.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens if one of the clubs from League Two the two clubs that I'm thinking of from League Two doesn't go up in Oxford or maybe Bristol Rovers. They've got two strikers there, and one of them scored 27, 28 goals. I forget the guy's name, for Rovers. And Oxford obviously got Kamar Roof. If they don't go up, then he ain't going to stay there. And all right, we haven't got exactly a wash with money, but you know, who's to say that we wouldn't go out and sign someone like that?
Well, it's a name that Reading have been linked with, and with rumoured that we talked about in the podcast extra on Friday, with rumoured exits for Jed Cooper, Oliver Norwood, maybe even Jordan Abita as well, all being looked at by Bournemouth. There might be a few pennies in the coffers. We can only hope. I noticed that Brian, in his news conference as well today, has gone and said that he hopes to reduce the overall size of the squad as well. So hopefully there should be some money. Johnny, again, looking surprised because I've said Reading have got some money.
No, you're just looking to reduce the size of the squad. I mean, there's only going to be about 12 players here next season.
Oh, no, it's huge. The squad's bloated at the moment.
Exactly. It's far too heavily weighted in favour of attacking midfielders for a start. We need to get rid of, two or three of those for a start. You know, there's your immediate sort of leaning of the squad.
Yeah. Mm. I think if you look at the back of the programme, it goes down, it's best part of 35-odd.
Yeah, but my point is there are going to be 9 or 10 players who aren't here next season anyway.
Oh yeah, but
then he brings in 5 or 6.
Yeah, exactly. So it's in the overall terms, not as in he will just cull everyone. So
no, exactly.
Right,
what that also does is it reduces, hopefully, and presumably will reduce the wage bill.
Fingers crossed. Jack says, I'm really not a fan of the new formation. Reading always play better with width, although it does allow all our players for next season to play, which is fair enough. Another thing is, I was hugely impressed with Rackers on Saturday. Looked sharp and scored a very good goal. Gave 100% effort throughout the whole game, which was good to see, along with many of the other players, which was refreshing. Even though it was a draw, came away feeling relatively optimistic for next season.
Interesting that we got someone who's lauding a player for giving 100% effort, and yet when Mate Vidra gets 100% or gives 100% effort, he gets just slated.
Yeah, quiet, Tim. moving on.
Playing devil's advocate there.
Dan Harrington. Good to see Brian begins to put a few things together for next season. Rackles will be important. And Notorious, also talking about the QPR game, says it was a good performance. Rackles is the new cult hero, if he stays for a while.
Sorry, just about end. Brian putting together things for next season with 5 games without a win.
Yeah, but he's 1 game without defeat, Johnny.
You work for the club sometimes. You think you work for the club sometimes.
Work with me. Come on.
That
moment when. I wish I was on the payroll. Mm-hmm. Wouldn't have to buy a season ticket for a start. I have to pay to watch this tripe. I'm sort of going against my positivity within the space of about 20 seconds. So there you go. I suppose you can say he's putting some things together. Again, they're being competitive in games. But I will kind of disagree. I'm kind of with you there, Johnny. I don't know that I'm seeing anything positive in terms for next season. Dave, are you?
Not overly, no. I think he's obviously taken a look at certain players. I mean, Simon Cox has been heavily debated already. He's clearly taken a look at some of the lone players as well to see whether they're worth keeping. Obviously Alex Fernandez, we know, is going to be bombed out the door. It's just not happened for him. Ola John's had a decent run. Lucas Pearson's had a decent run. Vidra's had a decent run. I don't think we'll be seeing Diamond at the beginning of next season. I think that's just a formation that suits the players, or that Brian thinks suits the players at the moment. I think he will have his mind set on a formation, hopefully, for next season, and start moulding a team as he sees fit, and bringing in players that he knows and could do. Do more than a job sort of bring us up to the level where we need to be.
We can but hope. Now, speaking of next season, a couple of questions on players for next season, starting with Raw Hoops. Steve again, he says, Tariq Fosu or Ola John, pick one for your left wing next season. And on that theme is Stuart, who tweets in saying, some fans want Samuel Fosu and Tanner playing for us next year. Do you think they're ready? Big jump up from League Two to the Championship. So starting with, is Fosu better than Ola John for one place next season?
I'm not sure that he's better than Ola John, but I prefer to have him in my team than Ola John. Look at Ola John over the last month. He's done nothing. He just looks, honestly, he looks lazy, uninterested, and it's all the bad parts.
Is he an unprofessional joke of a player?
I'm the one who brought up the Royston-Drenthe comparison originally. He'll do something amazing and then go missing for 60 minutes.
Ooh, I think he's been a bit better and a bit more interested than Royston. I think maybe he's gone off the board because the season's gone off the board. And he's been chucked back on the bench as well, which probably doesn't do much for his morale. But
even when he comes on, even when he comes off and you think, oh, come on, Ola, and then he'll just dribble down a blind alley and do nothing.
He's above Royston, but he's not at Glenn Little levels.
He's a maverick player, isn't he? He's one of those, exactly as you say, one of those players who'll just go missing but then produce a moment of magic. As he has done, you know, on a couple of occasions this season. As for him or Tariq Fosu, Tariq Fosu every single time. Fosu, he kind of stormed onto the scene with that performance up at Derby, and there were within sort of 2 or 3 months last year, he was the new great hope, and suddenly just went missing. He had an excellent, really, really good pre-season.
We all tipped him to be our breakout player.
And he hasn't made a single appearance so far this season. He's gone to Fleetwood. They liked him there. And Accrington Stanley fans love him. All right, it's League Two.
But Jordan Abita did similar. Jordan Abita went to
So did Gylfi Sigurdsson with Crewe.
Yeah. Mm. He was also at Shrewsbury. They liked him. Tariq Fosu, there's clearly potential there. And I'd be inclined. If we're talking about giving Brian McDermott time, you've got to give him time to play, to bed these youngsters in. You know, let the youngsters sort of bed themselves in, as it were, get to know the Championship. Fosu's done well. Tanner's done well at Plymouth. He's got a season of League Two underneath him. Who's to say he won't come in and do something similar to what Tish Bowler did this season? Dominic Samuel did well at Coventry at League One last season, done well at Gillingham this season, although I would have liked to have seen a few more goals. I think he's only scored 6 in about 20, 25 appearances.
Yeah, and he's had a few more injury problems as well.
Tends to happen with youngsters, though, that the goals come with experience, within 2 or 3 years of experience. So, blood the youngsters.
Agreed.
Blood the youngsters, but don't then come complaining when we're in a relegation battle next year.
I don't think
that's where the summer comes into it, where you sign your experience.
It's the mix as well, isn't it? Throw all. I mean, that's exactly what Brendan Rodgers tried to do. You remember in those first few games of 2009-10 season, he threw in so many youngsters at once, and they were absolutely played off the park at places like Newcastle, by experienced teams like Sheffield United. They just didn't stand a chance, and he very quickly realised. But sadly too late for him, that he needed a bit more experience in there.
But this is, when we get the question generally in sort of February, March, when the season is dead, chuck in the youngsters. But then you have to be prepared that you probably, in a couple of games, you're going to get battered 3 or 4-0 because they're not ready, they're not good enough. Well, if they were good enough, they would have come into the team already.
Look at the stick that Jake Cooper's getting from some people. Yeah. And we're talking about a player who's got 40-odd games behind him, and he's still making these amateur mistakes. And he gets the stick, often. So...
But he still has Premier League clubs looking at him.
Yeah, well, exactly. I mean, there's good reason.
I know who I'd trust to give their opinion. You know, the fact that he's actually got Premier League clubs looking at him and considering making offers for him in the summer. Again, you've got to remember that they will make the mistakes, and you've got to be able to accept that, understand that it's going to happen. Yeah, be disappointed, but. Don't get on the kids' back.
Well, it's nice to have those options. And given that, I mentioned that there will hopefully be some money to spend this summer, but I'm not expecting massive amounts. We will be seeing some of these players at least given an extended run in pre-season. So that will remain to be seen whether they make the step up and start a lot of Championship games next season. But that brings to an end the mailbag. We've just got a few other bits to wrap up, including those final two games of the season in Any Other Business.
The Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Any Other Business.
Two games, gentlemen. That's all we've got left in this Championship season. Two games. Preston at home on Saturday and then Blackburn away on the final day of the season. Oh, how times have changed. I remember going to Ewood Park when a win would get us into Europe.
And we'll do it for Petr Mate. We'll win the league at Ewood Park.
At least the inflatables remain the same. I remember a good digger going around that day in the end, that 3-3 draw. cracking away day.
Big old SpongeBob as well, if I remember.
But unfortunately, the only thing on the line here will be whether we finish 14th or 15th by the looks of it. I don't really want to say a lot about these games, do either of you two? I mean, Preston are a team, they're 11th in the table, 6 points above us, so mathematically we can catch them. Blackburn are a team in 18th, 3 points below us, so they could overtake us. I mean,
we've got a good record against Preston at home. They're a solid side. There's nothing left riding on the season. I'll just be happy to see us maintain our unbeaten.
Yeah, Johnny, anything you're looking out for in these couple of games?
I've got a soft spot for Preston because I was a mascot against them on my 10th or 11th birthday. We won 2-1.
Very nice.
Preston haven't won in their last five, but I'm still not confident.
No. Would you restore Paul McShane or Danny Williams after their suspensions have come to an end? Or do you just stick with the likes of George Evans and see what you get out of Anton Ferdinand, knowing that Paul's here next season?
Well, I think I'd probably restore McShane. He's the captain. He's a steady head. I probably wouldn't restore Williams.
Dave, either of those getting back in your team?
I don't see why not. They're going to be here. Well, Williams questionable, but McShane's going to be here next season, unless there's a stupid bid comes in. So yeah, why not?
Yeah. The only thing is that is still riding on this season. There may not be anything up for grabs for Reading, but there is big things up for grabs in the Tarlhurst End Prediction League. It's come down to the final two games of the season. It is Johnny versus Charles for the title. Still a chance, Dave, for you to sneak up into his highest third. You'd need to get both of these results right and hope I have a mare. But you are just a point behind Mr. Alan West, who did predict a defeat for the QPR game. So as we go into these final two games, Johnny's on top on 32 points. Charles is second on 31. Then you have myself on 24, Westy on 20, and Dave, who, remember, only joined the league a few games into the season, is on 19 points. So we'll start.
I still think you should give me those 3 points for Bristol City.
I'm not giving you those points for Bristol City. We will let you have first picks for these two, though, Dave. How are you seeing the Preston and then Blackburn game?
Preston will win 2-0. Blackburn, we've never won there, so I'll go 1-1.
Right, I will say we are going to beat Preston. I think it's going to be a rare win. I think we're going to win 3-1 out of nowhere. And Blackburn, I think we are going to have a fantastic 2-2 draw. Johnny.
Hope Akran scoring.
Yes.
And Guthrie.
And Danny Guthrie, yeah.
He's injured, isn't he? Or is probably. He's completely bombed this season, pretty much.
Or is he playing FIFA?
Could be. Johnny?
I'll go for a 1-1 draw against Preston and 500 fans staying for the lap of appreciation.
Okay.
Can that be the tiebreaker?
We did say that in the podcast section between me and Charles, that should be the tiebreaker.
Oh, okay. I'll go for a 1-1 at Blackburn as well. So two mediocre draws to end a mediocre season.
Okay, I can tell you that Charles he's only given me one. He's gone for 2-0 for Reading to beat Preston.
Okay.
So there is going to be, unless Preston win, there might be a change at the top. He's not given me the Blackburn result, but I will also allow you to change it should things happen in the next week. I'll get Westy's prediction as well. If you're wondering where Westy has been, by the way, he's still around. He's still happy, fine. It's just the days that we're recording now, we tend to record in early afternoons and on weekends and with increased family commitments and things. He's just not been able to join us. He has, though, in good transfer news for the Tarlhurst End, he has committed to the end of season special, which will be taking place on Tuesday, May the 17th. It's going to start roughly 7:30-ish. At a pub in the town centre to be confirmed.
Yeah, I think that's how you convinced him.
Yes, I did say there'll be out. I didn't tell him there was a podcast. I just said we're going down the pub. So there will be more details of that. Unfortunately, there will be no more shows before the end of the season. I fly off to the USA at the weekend, so I won't be here. And I'm sure as much as Johnny would like to host a show, he's not going to host a show, are you?
No.
No, it's not. So, and unfortunately, I'm busy on Friday, so I don't think there's going to be a podcast extra with myself and Charles, but I will catch up with Charles just after the end of the season to get a bit of a debrief there as well. He might even turn up for the end of season show. Who knows? But all that remains to say is thank you very much to all of you who downloaded this week and throughout the season. Please keep those thoughts coming in to the Twitter account at the Tarlhurst End and your emails to thetarlhurstend@gmail.com. We do our very best to get as many of them out on the end of season show as possible. And if you are available on that day, it is a free-for-all. Anyone is welcome down to the show to share their opinions. just as we had at Christmas. So as I said, stay tuned to the Twitter account and the website for full details on that. But in the meantime, the only thing left to be said is come on, you arse.
Tarlhurst End Podcast.
Read the blog
on thetarlhurstend.com.